listening to the Kill Radio Weekly News and Review. I'm your announcer, DJ Shy John, recording here in Los Angeles. This is Tuesday, December the 3rd, 2013. I have three news articles to present today. I'm going to put the Harpers right in the middle. First up, I have this article from The Guardian, one of the world's most trusted and respected news sources. The article is entitled, "Looking for Fraud? Don't look at food stamp recipients, look at Wall Street." Food stamps keep 47 million people from going hungry, so cuts hurt. Congress should focus on where the real abuse happens. This article was written by Chris Arnade, TheGuardian.com, Tuesday, 3 December 2013. Hunger will drive kids to do crazy things, like stay at school. A few weeks ago, South Bronx public schools had a half day with dismissal at noon, yet almost all the kids stayed an extra hour waiting in the cafeteria to eat the school's free lunch. Teachers even got calls from parents of children who hadn't stayed, asking them why they let their children leave without a meal. The teachers explained that this had never been an issue before. Kids had always left when they could. The parents responded, "That was before the cut in food stamps. We get $45 less a month now." The cuts to food stamps had come 2 weeks earlier, on the 1st of November, a result of Congress failing to renew the increase to the program in the 2009 stimulus package. That increase was included as a small attempt to blunt the pain of a recession that was disproportionately affecting the poor. The school kids' neighborhood, the South Bronx, has been hit particularly hard by the recession. Here, families live day by day on an average income of roughly $16,000. A drop in income doesn't mean less money for retirement. It means less food now, less clothing now, less everything now. Food stamps are often the only thing keeping families fed, and $45 less a month has an impact. Sadly, Republicans in Congress are not just content to let the poor increases lapse. They are pushing for even greater cuts. They try to justify the reductions by pointing to the growth in food stamps and painting it as a program rife with abuse. They have gone to the media with tales of fraud, of people selling food stamps to buy luxury goods. One Fox News report detailed a surfer who used food stamps to buy sushi and lobster. A modern twist on an age-old narrative that plays into the tired stereotype of welfare queens. "I have watched people sell food stamps for money. I see it almost monthly. They don't buy lobsters. They are homeless addicts and they buy heroin or crack or dollar bottles of vodka. They don't just buy drugs. They also buy food from the dollar menu at McDonald's, or sometimes they spend the money on blankets for their beds under bridges, next to expressways or in abandoned buildings. This is fraud, but it certainly isn't rife. The homeless addicts are the outliers, a tiny, desperate sliver of the food stamp population. They are not proud of this. They are addicts who are trying to feed their addiction through any means. Selling food stamps is preferable to selling their body. They don't just sell them. They also come up with elaborate schemes to skirt the rules, to turn food stamps into drugs or cash. I can't help but smile when they explain these games to me. Some are complex enough to be worthy of Wall Street. I worked on Wall Street for 20 years. There, people regularly abuse rules and regulations, trying to exploit loopholes. This does not embarrass them. Many take pride in it. In the late 90s, I helped my firm and its clients invest in the stocks and bonds of Brazil. We invested billions. Lots of firms did this. Yet some U.S. firms invested first through a Canadian partner and then into Brazil. Why? Because Canada and Brazil had a tax treaty designed to encourage long-term investments by Canadian companies into Brazil. You know, in things like roads, planes, and groves of oranges. The Wall Street firms were doing little of those things, but they had found a way to make it look like they were. That way they could gain tax credits that could then be sold back to the Canadians. They were not breaking the letter of the law. High-priced lawyers and tax consultants made sure of that, but they certainly were breaking the spirit of the law. And that was something to brag about at dinner to other Wall Street traders. It certainly wasn't something to be ashamed of. We would sit around at those dinners eating sushi and lobster, drinking and proudly telling stories about overcoming some regulatory obstacle, of finding some flaw in a law that could be exploited. One trader told how his firm, unable to invest in an Asian country because of local laws, bought a golf course and used it as a shell vehicle for investing in stocks and bonds. You see, foreigners could buy golf courses, but not stocks and bonds. Nobody was sure if they had actually done it. We swapped stories with pride. We didn't call what we were doing fraud, which is such a louche word. We call it arbitrage. Of all the rule breakers out there, it's sad that Republicans seem to be focused only on the poor. You can look at any program and find some degree of abuse. When it comes to benefit fraud, food stamp abuse attracts a small, desperate group looking for another way to stay alive, to feed their addiction. They don't take any pride in their desperation. Yet food stamps also keeps about 47 million people fed, legally and efficiently. A tiny amount of fraud, estimated to be only 1.5% of the system, is not a bad price to pay for that to keep people from starving. The much bigger abuser of programs and exploiter of loopholes in rules and regulations is Wall Street. They don't do it out of desperation. They do it out of greed. When will congressional Republicans call them out for it? Probably not anytime soon, huh? Next up, the Harper's Weekly Review, dated December 3rd, 2013. On Black Friday, thousands of Walmart employees and union supporters staged protests to demand annual wages of at least $25,000 for the 825,000 workers who make less than that amount and supplement their incomes with an average of $1,000 annually in Medicaid and food stamps. "The protest is sad," said a Southern California shopper, "because Walmart has good prices." Police arrested a man dressed as Santa Claus outside an Ontario, California Walmart. A shopper stabbed and pulled a gun on another shopper during a dispute over a parking space outside a Claypool Hill, Virginia Walmart. Police pepper sprayed one shopper and ticketed another for spitting on a stranger's child at a Garfield, New Jersey Walmart. A police officer was hospitalized for injuries sustained while breaking up a fight outside a Rialto, California Walmart. And a bomb threat led police to evacuate a White Plains, New York Walmart. "Black Friday is the Super Bowl of retail," said Walmart U.S. CEO Bill Simon. "We ran a play that only Walmart could deliver." The Prime Minister of Latvia resigned after taking responsibility for the November 21 collapse of a Maxima supermarket in Riga, which killed 54 people, and Maxima's head of operations for Latvia was fired. "May those who feel real responsibility resign," he said. "I can look people in the eye." Protesters in Gafsa, Tunisia, set fire to the regional headquarters of the country's ruling Islamist party during a demonstration to demand economic investment in poor areas, and police in Cairo beat several women and stripped a photographer while ending a peaceful demonstration against military trials of civilians and a law banning gatherings of more than 10 people. Icelandic police shot and killed a civilian for the first time, then apologized for it. In Thailand, protesters calling for the removal of Prime Minister Yingluck Shinawatra, whose brother was unseated by a 2006 military coup following accusations of corruption and abuse of power, threw fireworks at riot police and sought to enter Shinawatra's residence by breaking barricades with garbage trucks. Former Deputy Prime Minister Sothep Thaugsuban called on his supporters to besiege every government office in the country, many of which subsequently closed, and anti-government yellow shirts engaged in shootouts with pro-government red shirts that left three people dead. "I will remain here," said Shinawatra. "I may be a woman, but I have the courage to face all possible scenarios." Silvio Berlusconi was expelled from the Italian parliament over his conviction for tax fraud, prompting his 28-year-old girlfriend to appeal to Pope Francis on his behalf. "It was the right thing to do," said a lawmaker who supported the expulsion. "Otherwise, we would have had the law of the jungle." Amazon released a promotional video for its experimental drone delivery service that depicted an unmanned octocopter flying a yellow box containing a rollerblade adjusting tool to a father and son. "It's a symphony of people," said CEO Jeff Bezos. "It's a symphony of software. It's a symphony of robots." Yeah. Four people were arrested for using a remote-controlled hexacopter to fly 2 pounds of tobacco to prisoners inside the yard at Calhoun State Prison in Georgia. The ACLU filed a lawsuit alleging that an Albuquerque prison guard had used pepper spray on an inmate's vagina, and a Swedish prisoner with a toothache escaped to visit the dentist, then returned to jail. Croatia voted to ban gay marriage, and France began investigating Bob Dylan for inciting ethnic hatred against Croats in an interview he gave to Rolling Stone in 2012. "If you got a slave master or clan in your blood, blacks can sense that," Dylan said, "just like Jews can sense Nazi blood and the Serbs can sense Croatian blood." The Republican National Committee commended Rosa Parks on Twitter for ending racism. Oh, my God. A white employee of a 99-cent store in... a white employee of a 99-pence store in Witham, England, accused his non-white employers of treating him like a slave. And a Plantation, Florida, police officer was arrested after he refused to remove his Guy Fawkes mask during an anti-Obamacare protest. It was revealed that the National Security Agency collected data on the pornography habits of 6 young Muslim men believed to be connected to terrorist groups with the aim of harming their reputations. ProPublica reported that Karl Rove's fundraising group, Crossroads GPS, violated the terms of its tax-exempt status by awarding grant money to right-wing political organizations. "That's called bullshit," said a former IRS official, with a serving of horseshit on the side. A Mormon bishop who attended a service in Utah disguised as a homeless man in order to teach his ward about compassion was asked by a congregant to leave. The Fast and the Furious star Paul Walker died in a car crash, and the mayor of Hampton, Florida, was arrested for buying and selling oxycodone. "We will not tolerate illegal drug activity," said the county sheriff. "This isn't Toronto." And this article was written by Jesse Barron. And now, off from the serious side of the news to something a little lighter, perhaps. This is from mindhacks.com. It got me thinking, why is the loudest person in the room the least informed person in the room? Why is it that those who don't do teach? Well, here we have it in this article. Why the stupid think they're smart? Psychologists have shown humans are poor judges of their own abilities, from sense of humor to grammar. The worst of it are the worst judges of all. You're pretty smart, right? Clever and funny, too. Of course you are, just like me. But wouldn't it be terrible if we were mistaken? Psychologists have shown that we are more likely to be blind to our own failings than perhaps we realize. This could explain why some incompetent people are so annoying, and also inject a healthy dose of humility into our own sense of self-regard. In 1999, Justin Kruger and David Dunning from Cornell University, New York, tested whether people who lack the skills or abilities for something are more likely to lack awareness of their lack of ability. At the start of their research paper, they cite a Pittsburgh bank robber called MacArthur Wheeler as an example, who was arrested in 1995 shortly after robbing two banks in broad daylight without wearing a mask or any kind of disguise. When police showed him the security camera footage, he protested, "But I wore the juice." The hapless criminal believed that if you rubbed your face with lemon juice, you would be invisible to security cameras. Kruger and Dunning were interested in testing another kind of laughing matter. They asked professional comedians to rate 30 jokes for funniness. Then 65 undergraduates were asked to rate the jokes too, and then ranked according to how well their judgment matched those of the professionals. They were also asked how well they thought they had done compared to the average person. As you might expect, most people thought their ability to tell what was funny was above average. The results were, however, most interesting when split according to how well participants performed. Those slightly above average in their ability to rate jokes were highly accurate in their self-assessment, while those who actually did the best tended to think they were only slightly above average. Participants who were least able to judge what was funny, at least according to the professional comics, were also least able to accurately assess their own ability. This finding was not a quirk of trying to measure subjective sense of humor. The researchers repeated the experiment, only this time with tests of logical reasoning and grammar. These disciplines have defined answers, and in each case, they found the same pattern. Those people who performed the worst were also the worst in estimating their own aptitude. In all three studies, those whose performance put them in the lowest quarter massively overestimated their own abilities by rating themselves as above average. It didn't even help the poor performers to be given a benchmark. In a later study, the most incompetent participants still failed to realize they were bottom of the pack, even when given feedback on the performance of others. Kruger and Dunning's interpretation is that accurately assessing skill level relies on some of the same core abilities as actually performing that skill. So the least competent suffer a double deficit. Not only are they incompetent, but they lack the mental tools to judge their own incompetence. In a key final test, Kruger and Dunning trained a group of poor performers in logical reasoning tasks. This improved participants' self-assessments, suggesting that ability levels really did influence self-awareness. Other research has shown that this unskilled and unaware of it effect holds in real-life situations, not just in abstract laboratory tests. For example, hunters who know the least about firearms also have the most inaccurate view of their firearm knowledge, and doctors with the worst patient interviewing skills are the least likely to recognize their inadequacies. What has become known as the Dunning-Kruger effect is an example of what psychologists call metacognition, thinking about thinking. It's also something that should give us all pause for thought. The effect might just explain the apparently baffling self-belief of some of your friends and colleagues. But before you start getting too smug, just remember one thing. As unlikely as you might think it is, you too could be walking around blissfully ignorant of your ignorance. Gee, that sounds like Congress, doesn't it? Well, anyway, that's all the time we have for news today, boys and girls. So have a wonderful week, be kind to one another, and stay out of the news.